see the fun. I see the fun. The Diary of Jack Kirkman Podcast.
I need someone to improve my station. And I'm only doing fun when I'm having fun. And I don't have to please no one. And I don't give a damn about my bad reputation. Oh no, 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 not me. No, 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 not me. Oh no, 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 not me. I don't give a damn about my reputation. I've never been afraid of any deviation. And I don't really care if you think I'm strange. I ain't gonna change. And I don't really care.
Reputation! What's up, Joan? Jet. Don't sue me, girl. I want to play your song. All right. Oh, I didn't know this was going to happen tonight. I Seem Fun, The Diary of Jen Kirkman. Episode 47. Oh, we're hitting menopause. Oh, I didn't think I was going to record tonight. It should be out by now. But I have been so busy. Every second of the day, midnight to 6 a.m. has been my only free time. And I need to sleep. But I thought, they're not going to understand if I don't record a podcast. Not because you're stupid. But I was going to record like a 10-minute one going, look, I've been really busy this week. It's been crazy. And I have, it's a lot I'm doing. But it doesn't mean like, oh my God, my career's taking off. Usually the busier you are means like weirdly the less it is. So it's nothing to do with that. I had this really busy week where I'm on the road every weekend. I work full time. I have life responsibilities. And then I'm doing a lot of like behind the scenes stuff because the paperback version of my book, I Can Barely Take Care of Myself, which is already out as a hardcover and an audiobook, Amazon.com and many other booksellers. Barnes & Noble, Tantor.com, that's where the audiobook is. Go to my website, jenkirkman.com/book, and it shows you like all the different places you can get the book. But yeah, it came out a year ago, April 16th, but now the paperback version is coming out April 22nd. So there's just like weird stuff I have to do. It's like a million emails going back and forth. I have to spend a night like filling out these things for like publications. It's just this stuff all the time. Oh, this person's in town. Oh, that just happened. So I didn't want to, in order to shut everyone up, I did a podcast episode tonight because I didn't want people to be like, it's good you're so busy. Someday you won't have to do the podcast. Like, no, this is the only thing I like doing. It's free. No one can tell me how to do it. It's shaping up and becoming its own organic thing. I love watching it. I hate to talk about it like that. Like, it's so precious. Like, when people go, I can't wait to meet my baby. Oh, shut the fuck up. You're having a baby. You're not meeting a baby. Unless you literally, I have friends who put it that way. And part of me loves it because I'm kind of a hippy dippy. Like when they're like, I can't wait to meet my baby. Because you're right. In a way, I kind of love how they're not taking ownership of it. Like you make a child with sperm and egg, no matter how you do it, whether you fuck a guy or you got inseminated by your gay best friend and you're raising it with your lesbian wife or whatever. I know when you're a lesbian, you don't go, hey, my lesbian wife. It's just a wife. Whatever it is. However you make a child is great. And you put it in your little oven and you have it. And in one way, I really admire and subscribe to the vibe of, I can't wait to meet my baby, because you're already making them an individual, right? You can attest to the fact that there's some things about you that have nothing to do with the way your parents raised you or your siblings didn't influence you. You're like, I just feel like I was born this way. But you feel like you were just, you can't explain it. You just, I don't know, you came from another realm or you just showed up here. Maybe this is the only realm and the first one, who knows? But you are who you are. So in that sense, I like when people say things like, I can't wait to meet my baby. It gives them a little freedom. But man, no one ever says it where I haven't rolled my eyes on the drive home like, shut the fuck up, meet your baby. Stop being so fucking precious. Everyone has babies. Dinosaurs have babies and they don't even exist anymore. So just shut up. A blade of grass reproduces. Who cares? Big deal. But then part of me is like, I kind of like that talk. But it's one of those things where if I said something like that, and I'm not saying everyone has to be like me, and thank God they're not, because nobody would do anything succinctly. But I feel like I would say, okay, I'm about to say something really lame. I can't wait to meet my baby. And I know you're rolling your eyes, but what I'm just saying is I'm making a person inside of me, but it's not like I'm in control of it. Like, they are growing inside of me, but I'm not doing anything to make it happen. Like, I did the one thing that made it happen, and I'm keeping it alive by not, you know, going boogie boarding without the boogie board. You know, I'm keeping this thing alive, but nature's taking its course. It's growing inside of me. Nature knows how to do this. And then the baby's brain will develop, and who knows? Their first word could be anything, right? The first word could be rice pilaf, and you're like, I don't even have that in the house. Like, where did they get it? So I get that, but that's how I would say it if I was going to say something like that. But I've had friends who just, with no shame, have turned into different people and been like, I can't wait to meet my baby. And I'm like, what? Oh no. Oh God. And it sounds just so too precious for me. Unless they literally are like, no, that's how we give birth now. Like, C-section used to be all the rage, but now you actually meet your baby. You meet them at a coffee shop, like a first date. Like, my baby's going to walk into Starbucks any minute. I can't wait to meet them. I don't even know which baby it's going to be. I told them to, you know, wear a pink bonnet. Literally no idea how I got on that. Don't email me about how I did. Doesn't matter. But I'm here for you people. That was Joan Jett. Bad Reputation. Oh, this is me pretending I'm a DJ, by the way. Immediately would get fired from any radio station. Jen, you just sang over a song for 30 seconds and you've just talked for 6 minutes. Yeah, is that bad? Yeah, no, this is a pop radio station. So explain to me what I did wrong again. Well, you played a song from 30 years ago and then you sang over it and then you didn't even play the whole thing and now you're talking. Oh, okay, so what should I do? You're supposed to just play the hits. Oh. So am I fired, like, right now? Yes. Please pack your things. Please pack your records that you brought, which we don't even have record players at the radio station anymore. All right. I didn't know. I just thought maybe later on during the lunch hour, I could play Andy Gibb, I Want to Be Your Everything. But fine, I won't. I'll take this somewhere else to a radio station that appreciates me. Anyway, I'm happy to talk to you guys. This is the one thing I love doing. And even if I don't have time to do it sometimes because of the scheduling, I have to force and make the time because it's like that thing you really want to do. Like, you really want to have lunch with your friend, but you have work or you have this or you have that. But this, I have to make a commitment to if I want to get a steady following and all that kind of stuff. So, and I'm already having a blast and I am in bed this time. This is classic sitting in my room talking to myself time. But anyway, oh yeah, so that was Joan Jett. Now, I was thinking of Joan Jett because I thought she did a great job. I don't know if you watched the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Now, I don't even know when this was on or where I can see it. But I guess it was on HBO or something. I missed it. But I, of course, looked up clips on the internet. What an amazing world that we can do that, huh? Huh? And so I saw that Nirvana had done 4 songs and that they had women. Well, I shouldn't say women, like, you know, Mary from the Knitting Club. I mean, it was fucking rock stars, but that happened to be women. And sang a Nirvana song. And Joan Jett sang Smells Like Teen Spirit, and it was fucking awesome. She's just so tiny, and she reminds me of, like, a Muppet. I just love her and her Converse and her... She's just fucking great. Like, there's just some people that... I hate when people make fun of rock stars as they get older. Like, Steven Tyler looks stupid. Like, what should he look like? Like, he committed to that look so long ago, and I don't want him not to have long hair and jewelry and makeup and stuff. Like... What do you want him to do, you know? Your grandfather that sat there in his... You know, Kurt Cobain probably would look like he already looked like a grandfather in his cardigan sweater. So maybe he would have ended up an old man in a cardigan. But besides him, you know, your grandfather sitting on the couch in his cardigan, he wore a suit all day to work. A cardigan was like getting wild for him. It was like, you know, the sweater version of a suit. And that's what your grandfather's going to do. But Steven Tyler is, you know, he's not walking around in leather pants anymore. He might be wearing some board shorts in Hawaii with, you know, some leather anklets. Let the guy do it. That's his grandfather outfit. He's not a grandfather, but he's old enough to be. And God bless. I like people who look the way they look until the fucking end. Why should you change? It's called style, people. It's the only thing that makes life fun. Why would you give up on it? And it's the only thing that helps disguise your age. Right? Because people end up talking about your style when they think you're too old for it, but they're still not talking about your turkey neck. So fucking rock out your Converse and whatever else you do. Now, if you're not a rock star, I don't know. I don't know. Do you start dressing like one in your 60s? I think that's what I'm going to start doing. I've started dressing in the past year like a Led Zeppelin groupie. And it's fun for me because that's the look I always thought was cool when I was a kid. But I wasn't allowed to dress that way. So in my midlife crisis, and it is midlife because in 40 years I'll be 80. God fucking willing. So, you know, that's my look. Okay. And sometimes it's not. Sometimes my look is, I have all different kinds of looks, but I look how I want to look. No one is challenging me on that, but I am defiant anyway. Anywho. Oh, so the whole fucking point is, it was really wonderful that Nirvana had all those ladies play, and they didn't make a statement like, excuse me, everyone, we'd like to make an announcement. Due to the fact that our lead singer passed away 20 years ago, we will have different singers. And we'd like to point out that they're women. And we'd like to take this moment at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn to pat ourselves on the back. No, it wasn't that. It was just that Kurt Cobain obviously was a feminist and didn't differentiate men, women, this, that. You know, he was married to a rock star who was a woman, and he took female acts on the road, and this is stuff I've talked about a billion times. And he hated racist, sexist, homophobes, blah, 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 blah. So just the fact that it was just like, it wouldn't have been weird if four different dudes sang his songs. It's not that weird that four different women did. But I was reading the comments on the internet, and this is why we need like women's studies so badly, is because men were like overthinking it and getting it all twisted. And they were like, it's technically sexist, because they were saying by doing that, that no man could ever be Kurt Cobain. But sure, let's just have a woman do it because, you know, she'll never live up to his legacy. So it's like, no, that's not what they were doing. They were honoring Kurt, like he loved Sonic Youth, so it's cool to have Kim Gordon. Like they were making a statement that when you turn on your TV and you hear a great song like Smells Like Teen Spirit or All Apologies, that a woman singing it isn't ruining it. Like you can like the sound of a woman's voice. Like that's all it was. That's all it was. Part of me was sad that it just didn't work out in the life of Kurt and Courtney and Hole and Nirvana that Courtney couldn't have sang one of the songs. I mean, she certainly has the chops for it, right? I don't want to get into the whole debate. Kurt Cobain wrote Live Through This. It's a great album. Let's say he did write it. Let's say Kurt Cobain wrote Live Through This. She fucking still delivered it amazingly. She sang and played. I know she's not the world's greatest guitarist, but she sang and played. As she said once, I have a style. And she fucking had a style. And she was a very good front woman, front person, rock star. She got in the pit with people. I mean, she's nuts in the best of ways, right? Let's not forget the person who killed themselves. I mean, she at least stayed alive. Let's not glamorize him and destroy her. They both were mentally ill people who had drug problems that make it worse. And there's fame and rock star stuff and things that we can never understand, right? So let's all everybody calm the fuck down. And no, she didn't murder him, okay? Let's not be stupid. Let's just ask yourself, how dumb do I want to be, right? I know you think it's smart to have conspiracy theories, but it's not. When someone's last photo shoot is them so sick on heroin that they have to wear white sunglasses and they're falling asleep with their mouth open, that's not a cool pose. That last photo shoot, those photos, you know, are a man who is sick on heroin and dying. And the photographer did a big interview about it saying they couldn't get him out of his room. And then he brought a gun to the photo shoot and talked about killing himself the whole time. Believe, as my therapist would say, and someone told me that she didn't make it up. Someone else told her. I mean, it's like a famous quote. Believe people when they tell you who they are. And then he shot himself a month later. You know, she didn't murder him. So who cares? Whatever. We're not talking about that. But it bums me out in the whole, I understand that she's not completely, has not been completely stable at times. I understand that. I understand the lawsuits. I understand she let his image be used for Guitar Hero, which is like, ugh, I hate that too. I understand. I understand all of it. But we're not in Nirvana. We're not the keepers of anyone's image, right? So we can have opinions on it, but what really bummed me out in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was when Chris Novoselic and Dave Grohl made speeches, and then Wendy, Kurt Cobain's mom, made a speech, then Courtney did, and the audience started booing. It's like, that's not the spirit, you guys. She was as part of this as anyone else. And he loved her. He did not kill himself and leave a note that said, I hate you. He wrote it to her. And it was like, I love you, keep going. You know, so just for his sake, you know, don't boo her. It's in such bad form. It's just one of those things that you just had, you know, it just makes me sick. It's like Keith Richards is probably the craziest person that ever lived. Like his body has preserved itself by all the heroin he did. Like rock stars are like at that level are insane. Sometimes it's not because they are just insane people. You have a mentally ill person who's very talented, and then they're thrown into the public eye and we project all our fantasies onto them. Don't boo them. Don't boo someone. It's so disgusting. If you don't like what she's done, ask yourself, has it affected me directly? No. And two, ask yourself, am I really going to boo someone on stage when we all deserve a second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth, millionth chance in life? What are you booing? Is that going to bring Kurt Cobain back? No. And he would have been mad at you if you did that. If he came back to life, who he was, at that moment, he wouldn't have liked it. So everyone calm the fuck down. Okay. So I tried to do a thing where I was like, okay, you guys, I'm going to ask you for topic ideas. And then you send me these things you want me to talk about, and I get mad. I'm like, no, I don't want to talk about when I started in comedy. I've talked about that on 50 podcasts. So go to my website, jenkirkman.com/press. It's like every interview asks that. I don't want to talk about that. So I don't know why I do that. Then I get all cranky. So I apologize. Cranky corner. I want to talk about my weekend opening for Chelsea Handler. I got to perform in like arenas and big theaters and places that I never would perform on my own, like in Denver and St. Louis and Minneapolis. And the audiences were so amazing. I know that some people know in the audience know who I am from the show, but a lot didn't, you know. And to watch someone for half an hour perform that is the opening act to the person you really came to see, the audiences were so incredibly generous and wonderful and polite to me. There was no heckling or screaming or anything. And these were thousands and thousands of people a night. And it was wonderful. You guys made me feel so good. And I'm glad I made you laugh and all that kind of stuff. And that's all I'm going to say about that. The traveling, I flew from LA to Denver on Friday, and then Denver to St. Louis on Saturday, and then St. Louis to Minneapolis on Sunday, and then Sunday night after the show from Minneapolis to Los Angeles. Then we landed, then I went to bed, then I got up and went to work in the morning. So I was really tired, even though, yeah, I am only working half hour a night on stage. There's just so much traveling involved that obviously that makes a person tired. But I choose to not talk about someone else's tour because it's up to them to talk about if they want to and if they want to discuss how they travel and such. I think Chelsea has made it no secret that she travels on a private jet. She does not own her own jet, but we don't have to get into the details of anything, but I did have some moments where I thought, here I am flying to Denver, which I've done 80,000 times, but I was on a big commercial airliner, and I'm like, I'm in this 8-seater jet, and here are the Rocky Mountains, and oh my God, John Denver, and then someone on the plane absent-mindedly started singing Rocky Mountain High, and I was like, please do not sing John Denver on a private jet, and but then someone said he was in like a 1-seater plane when he died, like just flying around for fun, and I'm like, do people just get so bored when all their dreams come true that they're like, it's time to fly a plane. I just have to do that and see how that goes. Like, you're not going to not die. Like, you're just absolutely. But what's so bizarre to me, I guess I will talk about it, but what's so bizarre to me is on a private jet, the doors to the cockpit stay open. And they're literally a stone's throw. You could throw a York peppermint patty and hit the back of the pilot's head. I would be, if I was a pilot, like, I don't know these people. I mean, I know you don't know anyone when you're the pilot of a huge plane with 300 people on it, but you have that door locked. But I just can't believe they keep the doors open. I mean, I guess they could shut them. But it's kind of interesting because you can hear everything going on and everything sounds like something terrifying is happening. Like, at one point we were flying and I don't know if it's because the other planes were really close or if it's because we were low enough or just normally on normal flights. I don't know, but I've never been on planes where I've looked out both windows and seen planes on either side of us, not like right next to us. Like I wouldn't be able to, let's say there was some text on the side of a plane, not a text message, but if there was letters on the side of a plane, I wouldn't be able to read them. Like, but I could see a plane in the distance to my right and I could see one to my left. And all of a sudden, I hear in the cockpit, murr, murr. It's this crazy sound that sounds like a test of the emergency broadcast system. Murr, murr, traffic, traffic, traffic. And I'm like, oh my God, what does traffic, traffic, traffic mean? But you're trying to act cool, like, because you don't want to freak out other people on the plane or be annoying. And then I'm looking at this other woman on the plane, and I'm like, traffic, traffic. And then it was like, doo-doot, doo-doot, like another sound happens, and they're like, in the clear of conflict. In the clear of conflict? When were we not in the clear of conflict? When were we in the line of fire? It gets the weirdest thing, but I think these are normal sounds that the plane makes. I think they're normal, like, I think they're just saying traffic. Like, yes, there's traffic, so watch out and do your thing, and we're directing you from ground control or whatnot. And then it's just like, in the clear, but I'm like, they need to not have that blaring. And then when you're landing, it's the feet start counting down, so it's like, 500, 400, 300, 200, 100, 90, 80, 70, 60. And it's like building more anticipation than ever. But then I got on the plane Saturday from Denver to St. Louis. And the pilot was like, yeah, there's like storms. And I thought he was going to be like, so we can't take off. And he's like, yeah, it's just going to be really bumpy. There's storms, you know, hail, thunderstorm, whatever. I'm like, so we're going? He's like, oh, I wouldn't go if I didn't think it was safe. But it's like, well, so did you think of all the, then your mind starts playing all the times in history someone said that. Like the judge that was driving the Titanic. That's why it sank, because they had a judge instead of a captain of the ship. When the captain of the ship was like, iceberg, that thing's fine, or whatever. I don't have the exact historic quotes, but then I'm saying to the pilot, like, can you not say ironic things that I can later play in my head? But he was like, no, we fly above them. I'm just saying to get above them, it might get a little bumpy. And then I realize I'm dealing with my imagination, which is what I get paid to do. But my imagination is not always my friend. Just like, I can't wait to meet my baby. Sometimes I can't wait to meet my imagination and punch the shit out of it in an alley. Like, my imagination just does what it wants. Like, there's absolutely nothing dangerous about the plane going traffic, traffic. It's like, that's what happens all the time when you're flying. It's actually really safe and really a beautiful thing that you're in the sky, you have your own sense of senses, and then there's ground control and highly technological things that are keeping all the planes like lined up. He's just saying, okay, now it's the traffic time. So don't start doing stunts. If you felt like you wanted to just start flying around, like stay on your course, you know, and then you're out of any area of conflict, meaning not that you were, but now you are free to roam more in the sky if you needed to for some reason. Everything is so calculated. But my imagination goes crazy. So when someone says there's going to be bumps, I picture that we're going to be nosediving, then going back up, then going side to side, then, you know, a hailstone is going to break the window. And the guy was just like, you know, we had a little bit of bumps, a little bit of bumps. And when I asked the pilot why he warned us, he's like, well, because unlike a commercial plane, where you have stewardesses telling you what to do every second, we're up there flying. And I was just saying, it's going to be bumpy, so use your own judgment when getting up to go pee or putting on mascara. Like, don't poke yourself in the eye or don't, you know, start juggling. You know, that's all he was saying was police yourselves in terms of getting up and running around. Like, you might trip and fall. He literally was like, oh, I'm sorry. That was not a warning. Like, we may not make it. That was like, yeah, just be careful when you get up. And so I was like, well, next time you should be very clear, because I took an extra Klonopin, which made me really tired. And then I had to perform a few hours later. So I had to drink a Red Bull, which isn't really my style. And then I had trouble falling asleep that night. So you see the chain of events. When you talk to someone with an overactive imagination, now a normal person, you can say it's going to be bumpy and they go, oh, thank you, Captain. And they know that what that means is what he said. It's going to be bumpy. That's it. It's totally normal. Thing is built to make it through bumps. And you look at the, when there's turbulence and you look at the tail of the plane and it's not even moving, but you feel like it's bending, like, it's just turbulence. It's nothing. But anyway, so it was very, I think if when I'm at, you know, famous person arena level, I still think I'm going tour bus. I just, man, do I love the convenience of just like, there's no better feeling. I hope everyone gets to experience it that wants to, of just a car driving up to the nose of a plane and you walk out of the car and just walk up the steps and get on the plane. Like you, I can't even. You know, when I have to fly to Austin this Saturday, I'm back in my own tour, peon world. Me getting there early, standing in line while the woman goes, take your shoes off. I know I'm supposed to take them off. I fly every weekend. It's just, there's no bins. I'm taking them off in 1 second. Just shut up. I know. Just having them have to pat me down because I have a watch on, and then they just kind of like rub my watch lazily with their gloved hand and go, okay, I go, really? Because if I was a terrorist, don't you think I'd have a tiny little bomb inside my watch? You should dismantle my watch. How is rubbing it with your hand proving anything? If it set off the alarm, what are you doing? I mean, like, I went through TSA a couple weeks ago and they were like, you've been randomly selected to get your hands wiped down to search for gunpowder. I'm like, okay. I mean, it's hilarious. The last person who has gunpowder on their hands is J.K. Levin over here. I'm so afraid of guns. So the guy's rubbing down my hands and he goes, I go, how many people are randomly selected? He's like, oh, one in thousands. I go, oh, I'm so lucky. He goes, you should buy a lottery ticket. I go, I should, but my hands are busy being wiped down for traces of gunpowder. And then I was like, maybe I don't have the kind of luck that wins the lottery, but I have the kind of luck. I go, knowing my luck, there are traces of gunpowder on my hands, and I don't know how they got there, and something bad's going to happen. And he goes, you need to stop talking. I didn't realize. I forgot you can't joke around about gunpowder at the airport. I don't know why I forgot that. There's no reason. I guess just because I had never been randomly selected to have my hands wiped down before, and I didn't really know what he was doing till he explained it. Or bomb powder or whatever. Who fucking knows? What if he found powder on my hands from, like, when I had to put that chalk shit on my hands from when I took gymnastics 20 years ago in middle school? And, like, my hands never have gotten clean since then. Great story, Jen. All right. I didn't mean to go into the private jet thing because, again, it's not my stories to tell, but that's me and my imagination. But I wanted to thank the crowds, and it was super fun. Okay. Oh, but Austin, you guys, I'm taping I Seem Fun, my podcast. It's at the North Door. It's only $14. The new I Seem Fun t-shirts are going to be there. There's two different kinds. I've got men and women, all sizes. Please come to the show. It's going to be super fun. I already know some of the topics I'm going to talk about. I sold out the North Door when I came on my book tour, and you guys were like, I love your podcast. That was the beginning of it. And I know Austin's a great comedy town. It is the night before Easter, so I don't know if y'all are religious, but even Jesus stayed dead the night before Easter. He didn't go anywhere. So that's my point, is you don't need to go anywhere else but my show. I didn't really prove it by saying that Jesus is dead, but what I'm saying is come celebrate the night before Easter with me, and I will resurrect you all after the show. I don't know what that means. The ticket sales aren't bad, but they're not what they were before. So I'm hoping a lot of you are waiting to get your paycheck or something, and you're going to buy them last minute at the door. But if you are listening to this and you are in Austin, tell everybody. Okay. And that's Saturday, April 19th at the North Door. So, yeah, okay, so this is one of the things people asked me to talk about. Somebody wanted me to talk about the Ramones. And I don't know what more I can say about them, except I think for the live podcast in Austin, I'm going to talk about a letter I wrote when I was 25 that I found. And I'm going to talk about this newspaper article from when I was in high school about me and my friends sitting on the town common. I think I'm going to tell some really fun old stories about my life. So I'm going to save that for Austin. But I started saying it last week, and then I interrupted myself twice. So I've been wildly emotional the last couple weeks, and I don't want to hear you. It's your period. This is. Can I explain periods once and for all? I can't believe I'm doing this. On your period is the dumbest thing to accuse a woman of. Your period is a 3 to 5 day period of time where you are shedding the lining of your uterus. It means that all the hormones in your body were doing their thing, and all your blood was stagnant and being held in your uterus in case you wanted to make a baby. And once your body realizes, ain't no baby coming this month, hey, no judgment. Maybe it's because you're on the pill. Maybe you used a condom. We ain't saying no man put his seed up in you. Maybe you get lots of action. Okay, it's cool. But no baby was made. And so the uterus starts shedding its lining because it doesn't need it because you, woman alone, don't have a baby. Okay, so that's what that means. So at that point, all those hormones are released too. So actually, now all women are different, but for the most part, the first day of your period is like, ah, it's such a relief. You feel normal, and some people, including myself, even feel a little motivated and like maybe a little hyper, and it's just like you just feel completely balanced. It's the best feeling. With the exception of, yes, you are bleeding now, but that doesn't put you in a bad mood. That is just, it's not even connected to a mood. It's just like, oh, I have to do this thing every couple hours. I have to, you know, throw in a tampon or whatever people do. It's your choice. So whenever people say that women are in a bad mood because they're on their period, I'm like, I get what you think you're saying, but it's quite honestly, scientifically not true. On your period, have been some of my best moods. Premenstrual syndrome is the period before your period where your hormones are wacky because your body doesn't know if you're having a baby or not. And so your estrogen is really high. Just like men have testosterone and you guys openly brag about it and let it be known that you can't help yourselves. You have testosterone. You have to be horny. You have to be this. You have to be that. Well, that's what women are like. When their estrogen is really high, there's a lot of things that you could get super creative, but you could also get really emotional, which is not a bad word. I don't mean it negatively, but it might make you cry. It may make you very empathetic, which is a good thing, especially if you're an artist of any kind or even a doctor. It's great. But it's intense. Last week I was in the airport and I saw, you know, that thing where they let you board early if you have a disability or something. The person that was working the station, the person that works at the airline was like, okay, boarding first class and anyone that needs to board early. And I look over and there was this mother and father and they had two sons. I would say they were probably 9 and 12. And they had these two boys and both boys had canes. Both boys were blind. And I don't mean this to be condescending. My whole point about the period thing is this last week and this week is not my period or premenstrual syndrome or anything. I might just be, who knows, maybe I'm having like premenopause. Maybe it's not a hormonal thing. Maybe it's not a bad thing. Maybe, I don't know what, but I can't even talk about it without being about to cry because I don't know what it was. It was just them saying that it was time to board and these two boys with their canes and it was 11 at night and they were just kind of like using their canes to feel around, but there was a lot of people in the way and people were getting out of their way, but they didn't have glasses on and their eyes were closed. So I don't know if I don't know much. I mean, I have met blind people before whose eyes seem permanently closed. I've met blind people before who are legally blind and their eyes are open and you wouldn't know if they were legally blind. They just tell you. But these young boys had their eyes shut, but I don't know if it's because they can't open. I don't know. I don't mean to be ignorant, but it just looks like people walking with their eyes shut. So it just was this thing of it. I'm sure that they're doing great and I'm sure they have all the proper care they need and they don't need my pity and maybe they've never had sight ever. So it's less of a handicap for them and just more the way it is. I get all that. I don't mean it to be condescending, but it did look at that moment like it was a struggle. Like they were really using every tap of their cane to just make sure no one was in the way and they were going really slow and their parents were helping them. And one kid said to his mom, is it really okay if we go early? Is there anyone else that needs to get through? And I was like, oh my fucking God. This is how, like, I'm not trying to get ratings. It really makes me cry because I fly all the time and I've told these stories of these assholes who are screaming about being disrespected because the engine was broken one time. That's another episode. But this sweet little kid who can't see and has every right to get on the plane first, he should fucking fly for free, is asking his mom quiet and he's whispering to his mom. He's not even like yelling, like, are you sure it's okay for us to go? And they went. And I don't know, I'm sure they're fine, but I just know how awful kids can be, having grown up with awful kids. And let me make a very big preface about that, that I was not a nerd ever. I don't know Star Wars, Star Trek, Star anything. I know Star Magazine. I don't know nerd stuff. I was always a very unique kid. I had a big ego. I thought I was better than everyone else. I wanted to be going to Hollywood. I thought everyone was stupid. Like, I was only saddened by what looked to me like the vast wasteland of humanity. I sort of realized at a young age that adults aren't in control of much and that they might be bad people and that children are mini versions of that. And I just went, oh God, do I have a whole lifetime of these morons? Like, that's the kind of kid I was. And girls, it wasn't like, there was popular girls, whatever that meant, and they were sort of dismissive of me, but I had friends, and boys were mean to me. They picked on me a lot when I was 10, but I was very gender neutral in that way. Like, I would pick on them back and get into fist fights and stuff. But there was no, like, I'm a loser in high school. Like, no, 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 no. I was very fun and cool in high school, and I had my group of weird friends, and nobody picked on me or anything like that. So it wasn't like that, but I saw how cruel kids were to other people. And I remember there was this kid with MS or cerebral palsy. Ugh, forgive me. I forget. I'm not sure which one it was. I don't remember. And his name was Ted, and he was in my high school. And his muscles, you know, because they were compromised, he kind of walked funny, and he had those braces on his arms, and he had a really hard time walking, and he was always kind of shaky, and affected his speech too, you know, which is so interesting, because when your speech is compromised, it always leads people to think your brain is compromised. Not that that means you should treat someone any worse, like, or better, but it was just, he talked slowly because of muscles. So we kind of had that kind of thing going on. And I just remember, like, I couldn't believe this, because I was like, this is such a cliche of what I'm seeing in movies about teenagers. Like, there'd be these double doors to the cafeteria, and, you know, we had a wheelchair ramp, but it was only if you were going down one hallway, like, would you run into the wheelchair ramp and need to use it? But so it's like when Ted was coming down another hallway to get to the cafeteria, he tried to open these double doors, this kind that you just, like, push and it makes that big clunking sound. And I remember one time he was trying to open the door on his own, and I hadn't caught up to him yet. I obviously was on my way to help him. And all these jocks in literal, like, jock jackets, like, it looked like wardrobe department from a movie, was like, put these on before you do this, guys. Action. They ran by. They're like, oh, hey, Ted, what's up, dude? And they're like, meh. And they pushed him. And they opened the door so hard that the door he was holding onto slipped out of his hand, and it slammed in his face, and he fell. These are 16-year-olds. I mean, you're old enough to drive at that point. You're almost old enough to vote. You're almost old enough to fight for your country. And that's your call. That's your behavior, is to take someone who's disabled and shut the door in their face. The football players, like, I couldn't believe it. And I was like, and I truly mean it, I'll fucking kill those guys. Like, they deserve to die. Like, you're a waste of life. If I was their parent and I saw that, I would go, just take my kid and shoot him. Like, take him. He can't be taught. He's a terrible person. So I went, and a few of my friends, it was always, you know, I hung out with the weird kids, you know, the freaky kids, the kids that were all black, that the whole, and I'm going to talk about this at the live podcast in Austin, because I have really great newspaper articles I saved. But we were always getting accused of being the bad ones. Because God forbid anyone who plays sports ever does anything wrong. So we helped Ted, obviously, open the door and got him to where he was going. And, you know, he would join us at lunch or whatever. But a lot of time he was in, like, more remedial things and had to do physical therapy. So he wasn't, like, around a lot. But obviously, like, whatever. So I just remember when it was high school graduation, Ted was escorted. I don't know how this happened, if it was a last minute decision, like if someone ran up and started doing it, but when he went up to get his diploma, like one of the jocks that pushed the doors, and as far as I know, there had never been an apology, led him to the stage to get his diploma outside at the high school. And everyone started applauding and, like, gave Ted a standing ovation, but, like, the jock was sort of there taking it as well. And the jocks, like, all stood up. They kind of started it. Like, they started the standing ovation, like, oh, this guy graduated. Like, no, you fucking assholes used to, like, physically torment him. And I remember my friends and I booing, but we were booing the jocks. And then later, I just went up to them. I'm like, you're a complete piece of shit. You're a complete piece of fucking shit. And he was just like, whatever, freak. And I was like, I hope you die. And he didn't die, but Ted died a year later on Thanksgiving in the hospital. He never made it to college. He died at 18 or 19. Those fucking jocks went on to live, you know, whatever they fucking do. So it's that kind of shit that makes me so upset. So when I saw the blind kids, I just thought, if they've ever had a moment at school where they are the TED, I just wish, like, I could give their parents a business card and go, hey, I'm really emotionally wild. I'm pretty normal. You know, I have good friendships. My family and I are really close. I've certainly been great and terrible in relationships, but for the most part, I'm a really loving person and I get along well with others and I'm really positive, but boy, do I have some weird justice anger in me, and I'll beat the fuck out of any kids who are fucking with your blind sons. Like, do you need any help with that? Like, And I tweeted that I couldn't stop crying because I saw these kids, and someone tweeted back, you know, they're probably just fine. Handicapped people are a lot more strong than you think. And it really made me angry. Like, of course, I know that. But I really hope that they're in some situation where either they're just in a loving, tolerant environment, because I just couldn't have a kid. I'm too sensitive. Like, I couldn't have, not that people who have kids aren't sensitive and that's why they're good at it. I just mean, like, I wouldn't be able to function as a parent. Like, I would be just coming to school. Like, okay, this is all I can think about when I see this stuff, is my favorite scene in The Town. The movie The Town with Ben Affleck and Jeremy Renner. My favorite scene is, so Ben Affleck's hanging out with that girl, the one that he and his posse had kidnapped at the beginning of the movie. But, you know, he's technically a good guy, but he's into these gangsters that, you know, rob banks in South Boston and whatever. So she says to Ben Affleck, yeah, these guys, you know, my Prius broke down or something, and I've been walking through a bad neighborhood at night, and these guys, they've been taunting me. And Ben Affleck goes, what do they look like? And then cut to, he goes, so it's like, it's not Ben's friends that are tormenting this woman. It's just like some assholes they know. So Ben goes to his friend's house, who's played by Jeremy Renner. He's like, I don't want you to fucking ask any questions, but we're going to fuck up some people. And it's like the greatest thing, because it's like, I know that's not how you should live your life, but thank God there's entertainment that I can watch when I feel this way, because that's the business I want to have, where it's like, do you have a handicapped son? Call me. I don't give a fuck anymore. I've had a good life. You know, I've been in love. I have a great career. My family's good. I have material things. Like, if I have to go to jail for 6 months so that the fucking bully can get his ass kicked, dude, bring it on. So this is my favorite scene, and I'm going to play it for you. Okay, so she just tells him.
You remember what they look like?
He says, you remember what they look like? Now he's going to his friend's house, Ben.
I need your help. I can't tell you what it is. You can never ask me about it later, and we're going to hurt some people. Whose car are we
going to
take?
Yeah! Whose car are we going to take? We're going to go fuck some people up because they're mean to other people. Can't we talk it out? No. We're going to fucking take a crowbar and we're going to beat this guy's door down and then we're going to shoot him in the leg. So we really can't work it out any other way. No, we fucking can't, because these two people were just mean to some blind kids and I'm going to fuck shit up. Oh, okay. Oh, can you imagine that nerd in The Town? Well, technically, what do you mean don't ask any questions? I mean, the questions help me to make decisions. Oh, shut the fuck up. No one wants you around. Every once in a while, you need a guy from The Town in your fucking life. Yeah. If I tell you that someone was bothering me, you go take care of it. That's code for go beat the fuck out of somebody. Don't just go, well, technically, were the guys really harassing you? I mean, maybe they thought you were cute. Oh, you get out of here. I'm sorry I cried on my podcast, but you know what? I'm keeping it real. And if the AV Club wants, this podcast is almost a year old and the AV Club reviewed it once. And they don't barely have any women in the fucking podcast they review. So if they don't want to review mine, if people don't want to listen to this, fuck them. I'll sit here in bed and cry. That's what it'll become. Well, I'm a human being who saw a blind person. I can't cry, for Christ's sake. And why I'm mad at you people. But then I had this dream on the plane. Now, I don't know what this means. So my dream after I saw the blind kids and couldn't stop crying on the plane. And I don't have a fucking cat. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but before you try to analyze the dream, I'm going to tell you it's important to know I don't have a cat. I don't have any pets. I never did, except when I was little. So in my dream, I have a cat. And I don't know where... I'm thinking, why do I have a cat? Because I don't have a cat. And my cat is sitting in a high chair like a child, and it has spaghetti and meatballs in front of it. But the high chair is in front of a bed. And the cat is eating spaghetti and meatballs with its paws. And I'm going, no, no, like, don't eat that. That's human food. And then it like starts running on the bed and it's getting spaghetti and meatballs and sauce everywhere. And I'm like, no, no, kitty. But I'm like pissed. And I pick up the cat and it's like, wow, and it's going crazy in my arms. And it's turning around and looking at me. But when I look in the eyes of the cat, it's my face on a cat's body. And it's turning around and looking at me and it's getting terrified. And we're both going, ah, as we look at each other. And then the cat turns around again at me and it's my face. And we go, ah, and then the cat turns back into a cat with a cat's face. And it starts to go all like rigor mortis in my arms and it's like dying. And I'm like, oh, gross. And I drop it on the bed and I run out and I don't go back to see if it's alive. And I just woke up in a sweat, heart racing on the plane. And I was like, I'm a monster. Like, I know so many people whose cats have died in their arms or they've gone and put the cat to sleep and been there. And I'm like, I would never do that. And I don't know. So I'm the cat. I can't take care of myself. I don't know what that dream means. But it freaked me the fuck out. So I saw the blind kid. I had the dream about the cat, the spaghetti meatballs. That was me, wasn't me. Then I don't even know. I didn't go back to see, you know, what happened to it after it started to like get stiff on my bed. Do I need a vacation? Probably. Is everything okay? Very much so. Emailed with my mom today. I got to give her a call. She is going to give me her Peter Max skirt. I don't know if you know what that is, a famous designer from the 60s. He wasn't a clothing designer. He was an artist who did psychedelics. And she's got a long skirt. And it's such a mother thing because she's like, I've saved it forever because I always loved that I just had something from Peter Max. It doesn't fit anymore. There's a button missing. I'll sew it up next week when I'm not busy. I'm like, you don't just sew it for me, Mom. I mean, I don't know how to sew at all. I can't even thread a needle. But I can take it to the dry cleaning place down that I go to in Burbank. But I can't wait for this skirt. It might be my summertime outfit. Meanwhile, there is this dry cleaning place that I go to called Milt and Edie's, but I call it Eddie's, and I don't know why. I'm sexist. And it's in Burbank, and it's not really near me, but it's 24 hours, 365 days a week. I mean, a year. Oh, my God. 24/7, 365. Okay. And they clean everything, and it's you get everything back within 24 hours. It's the best. Very showbiz. So they have this sign there that says, we clean UGG boots. And I'm like, oh, that's a good idea. I love UGG boots. I wear them all the time. I hate when people make fun of them. People in LA with their UGG boots on. Yeah, when it's 50 degrees at night and you're running errands and you don't feel like tying up sneakers, throw some UGG boots on. It's so fucking comfortable. It's the best. So just shut the fuck up. So I love to wear my UGGs. But one time I left them in my car in the back seat and then I left my sunroof open and then it rained when I was inside running errands, and I came back outside, and the inside of my car was wet, which is fine, but the Ugg boots were all wet. And I'm like, oh my God, Mel Needy's, we clean Uggs. So I went and brought them there, and then I went to pick them up the next day, and they're like, we couldn't clean them. And I'm like, but it says we clean Uggs. And they said, this we couldn't get clean. I'm like, but it wasn't even dirty. It was just rainwater. And they're like, no, it just, we couldn't. And I was like, what the fuck? And then, like, another time I went there, and they're like, alterations while you wait. And I went in, and it was just a button was missing. And they're like, we don't have a matching button for this. And I'm like, well, it doesn't have to be matching because it's on the inside of the thing. So I'll do whatever. They're like, we don't do that. I'm like, so you're turning me away even though I'm like, use whatever fucking button? They're like, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm like, what the fuck? And I told my friend, and they go, you have the worst luck with stuff that is, like, guaranteed. They're like, what kind of energy do you put out? I'm like, I don't know. I don't think of bad energy. I mean, is there an energy that's like, we clean Uggs, not hers? She's giving off some weird vibe. Clean my Uggs. I'm human and I need to be Uggs cleaned just like everybody else. Uggs. Don't judge that. It was an honest riff. All right, people. I can't believe I got into tears. Don't worry about me. I'm fine. All right, listen to me. Whose car we taking to see me in Austin, Texas, Saturday, April 19th? Come on, people. I really need you. Don't be like, you'll see her again. I mean, you will, but I probably won't come back to Austin if I don't sell out. You know, I won't come back to do a podcast for a while. So come to that. My book is available in paperback right now on Amazon.com. Buy it. It's like $11. It's called I Can Barely Take Care of Myself. Maybe I'll make the New York Times bestseller list again in paperback. So buy it now. If you pre-order, that helps me get on the list. I have so many shows coming up. So then next week, I'm really excited about this fun week. I love Nashville so much, you guys. I'm going to Nashville. Zany's in Nashville is a wonderful comedy club. The shows are 18+. It's only $20, and they have let me come and do a 7 o'clock show on a Saturday. They know my schedule is crazy, and I can't give them like an entire weekend right now, and they never do this, and they were so kind to let me just do one show, and I really want to show them that they are loved for doing that, and I want you guys to come to Nashville Zany's. So I'm doing one show there. Then the night before that, I'll be in Chapel Hill, North Carolina at a rock club called Local 506. I'm going to be doing stand-up there. I'll be signing books after both shows, Nashville and Local 506. I just won't be selling them. So you got to get a book on your own. But in North Carolina, I know that Flyleaf Books has my book. They're going to have the paperback. So they promised. So go to Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. It is 752 Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Chapel Hill. Their phone number is 919-942-7373. Give them a call, see if they have my book. Then you can buy the paperback there, bring it to the show. I'll sign it, and that'll be fun. Okay, and then June, I'm doing two shows at the Hideout in Chicago, 7 p.m. and 10 p.m. on June 7th. I will be doing two tapings of I Seem Fun. Oh my God, I got to sell that out. And then the 13th and 14th, I'm in Vancouver. And I'm in Palm Beach and New Orleans in August. And I'll be in Halifax, more info coming in October. I'll be in Vegas in September, more info coming there. I'll be in Acme Comedy Club in Minneapolis in September, more info. All of that's at jenkirkman.com/tour dates. I'll be in Sweden in August doing a festival. And I'm fucking coming to Ireland in July. I turned it down because I was like, I'm going to lose my fucking mind if I have to leave this country three times in 6 months, just for a few days, but fuck it. I'm going to Ireland. So Dublin, I'll see you at some comedy festival. I forget the name. It'll be on my website at some point. But if you're out there, Ireland, I'm coming. Oh, Jesus. All right, you guys, I love you so much. Thanks for motivating me to tape this tonight. And thanks to everyone who also thought it was One Winged Dove from last week's podcast. Yeah. Oh, and somebody found I'd Rather Be Dancing with the song I was talking about. I just don't have time, I don't think, to play it right now because I'd have to download this thing and I didn't get it ready in time. So we'll do that on a future episode. But, here it is. Remember this last week I talked about it? I'd Rather Be Dancing, the song that started it all, that made me want to be a performer. Here it is. But I don't think it has the singing. Oh my God! I haven't heard this in 30 years. Nothing beats an old soft shoe.
I'd rather be a dancer. That's what I'd rather be. Not a nurse or a clerk. That's no fun work. It's a dancer's life for me. If I had...
Go to an... Oh, why'd it fade out? I mean, how punk rock is that fucking song, you guys? I'd like to thank Kevin H., who emailed this to me. You are the nicest person in the world. I'm going to actually have to download and buy that song to get the whole thing, which I obviously will, but I just can't figure out how to do it right this second. So, yeah, that's it. Okay. I love you guys, and I think I'm forgetting something. Oh, follow me on Twitter, at iSeemFunPodcast. Give me 5 stars on iTunes. It really helps. I guess it does help to have ratings. I don't know. So go on iTunes, write a review, give me 5 stars. You can put your favorite quote from any episode. Maybe this week you can put, what would you put this week? What do we talk about? Oh, put whose car are we taking? How's that? And then tell all your friends about it if they like a weird podcast where a grown woman cries in her bedroom and sings to herself. And then, I think that's it. Okay. Love you all. Until next week. Have fun.